540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A 9-year-old girl who had been missing for 2 days after last being seen in a state park has been found. CBS's Matt Piper has the latest.
New York State Police say Charlotte Senna has been found and is safe. The FBI had joined the search for the 9-year-old after she disappeared Saturday, after going biking with friends before doing one more loop on her own. It happened at a state park north of Albany. John Biscoff is with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and says fewer than 1% of missing children are abducted by strangers.
Non-family abductions are very rare in the United States today.
State police say a suspect is in custody. Matt Piper, CBS News, New York.
Florida Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz files a resolution to remove Kevin McCarthy as House Speaker. It comes after McCarthy turned to Democrats to pass a short-term funding bill avoiding a government shutdown. CBS's Nicole Killian reports.
Congressman Gaetz has not specified if indeed he has the votes to remove the Speaker, but it will be a pretty heavy lift from the standpoint that he would likely need Democratic support to do this.
A New York Supreme Court justice found former President Trump guilty of fraud last week for overstating the value of his assets to illegally obtain financing and more. A civil case now underway will determine damages. More from CBS's Robert Costa, who was in the courtroom today.
It's a sham.
The former president called the trial rigged and a witch hunt, days after the judge ruled he had committed fraud.
What we have here is an attempt to hurt me in an election.
I was inside the courtroom, sitting just steps behind the former president, and tensions were high. The attorney general sat in the first row. She watched Trump's every move, and Trump at one point glared at her as he left the room. This is a dramatic scene unfolding as Trump tries to protect the company he has long led.
Tomorrow is the swearing-in of a temporary replacement for Senator Dianne Feinstein, who died last week. CBS Evening News anchor and managing editor Nora O'Donnell has the details.
History will be made in the U.S. Senate when LaFonza Butler is sworn in to fill the seat of the late California Democrat Dianne Feinstein. Butler is the president of Emily's List, a fundraising group that backs female candidates who support abortion rights. She will be the first openly gay senator to represent California and the only black woman in the U.S. Senate. Butler will fill the seat at least until next year's election.
As United Auto Workers members walk the picket line, Ford says an additional 330 workers at its Chicago stamping plant and its engine plant in Lima, Ohio, have been temporarily laid off. Ford says the 330 are in addition to the 600 workers who've been temporarily laid off due to the strike impacts at Michigan Assembly. This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The Waukesha County preliminary hearing for the man charged with killing his girlfriend and hiding her body has been delayed. There's a question about the lawyer for Matthew Paul, so proceedings have been put on hold. The body of Stephanie Pavlins was found by construction workers in Delafield 1 year ago. Prosecutors say Paul hid her body there. A new hearing will take place in November. From here to Adams County, it's about two and a half hours as the crow flies, or in this case, as the flamingo flies. Birdwatchers recently sighted a group of flamingos near Pentonwell Lake. They were first seen a week ago in Port Washington and later along the Wisconsin River near the Dells. Scientists speculate that Hurricane Idalia may have caused the tropical birds to veer off course. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba.
Please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Thought we'd be talking about a government shutdown. Thought we'd be talking about, you know, the people who are going to be harmed. Thought we were going to be talking about, you know, McCarthy's failures. Thought we'd be talking about all that. And it seemed pretty likely when we cut out on Friday. But somehow, miraculously, you have McCarthy who pulled it out. Pulled a rabbit out of an orifice, and we've kicked this can down the road another 45 days, which, you know, hey, I'm thrilled we didn't shut everything down. But hey, we got something to look forward to at Thanksgiving, because you got to assume the rifts haven't healed. Is there an opportunity? Perhaps. Perhaps there's going to be an opportunity for McCarthy and the Republicans to act like adults and our government to heal somehow miraculously and to start doing the will of we the people. Seems very hopeful on my part. Maybe this is an opportunity for them to realize, hey, we've been doing things wrong. We should probably start trying to do things a little bit better. A little bit. I'm hoping. Hopeful. Always the optimist here. But, you know, so don't have that to talk about. So what are we going to talk about? Let's talk about Trump. Not a good day for Donald. Got the death penalty. The corporate death penalty happened because when you hire lawyers that advertise at 3 o'clock in the morning on cable news and they screw things up, surprise. But Sunday, Trump was in Ottumwa, Iowa. For a campaign rally and spiel. And what's, you know, they talk about Joe Biden and his inability to speak and you know, the gaffes that he makes. I'm listening to Trump give his little spiel. And I'm not even sure where this comes from. Listen to this.
But if I'm sitting down and that boat's going down and I'm on top of a battery, and the water starts flooding in, I'm getting concerned. But then I look 10 yards to my left and there's a shark over there. So I have a choice of electrocution or shark. You know what I'm gonna take? Electrocution. I will take electrocution every single time. Do we agree? I will take electrocution.
And my first thought was, well, go ahead. You know, knock yourself out, do what you gotta do. But what does this have to do with the campaign, anything? And the truth, nothing. The truth is this is just him doing what he does, which is, you know, just kind of riffing on whatever pops into his mind. I'm not sure how him being electric. Well, wait a second. How would him being electrocuted help the? Oh, never mind. I'm not falling down this hole. But here's the thing. While during the same spiel, he regurgitated that line that he's been using. Every time I get indicted, I consider it a great honor because I'm being indicted for you. No. You're not. Don't blame us for your bad behavior. No. Don't blame anyone but yourself for your bad behavior. That, my friend, on you. Or at least that's what my mother always said. You know, when you get into trouble, it's you. It's your responsibility. You did it. You know, the old Beretta theme. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. So here's the thing. Federal trial starts today. And this is kind of like the penalty phase of a $250 million civil fraud suit. Also, could be the end of Trump doing business in New York. This is kind of a big freaking deal. Really kind of is. And so, you know, of course, Trump is going to lose his mind. He goes after the judge, says this judge should be disbarred. This is a judge who should be out of office. This is a judge that some people say could be charged criminally for what he's doing. He's interfering with an election. It's a disgrace. No. He's holding you accountable for your lies and your deceit. Now, understand, he's already admitted that he deflates, you know, the value of things. He's already admitted that he doesn't believe it can be inflated enough because ultimately, and this is the part that just still blows my mind, that this was their defense, he can get any price he wants simply by going to the Saudis, and the Saudis will pay him whatever he wants. I don't know how that happens, but, you know, if your house is worth $100,000 and a Saudi guy wants to give you, you know, $500,000 for it, would you take it? Of course you would. But what would you have to do? Now, today, the other big story, tell you how screwed up our news media is. Evidently, Trump called in a massive McDonald's order to be delivered to the trial. More hamburgers, yes. And this is one of those things where you go, one, I'm not quite sure. Does he have stock in the Golden Arches? Or what's the point? Well, the point is to get attention and to divert the attention away from his own failures. Look, he hired some lawyers who evidently, and this is mind-blowing, didn't do their job. Because I was wondering last week, going, how is it that this judge, you know, issued a bench decision? You know, nobody in their right mind, if you're in Trump world, would give one person who's unimpeachable and unable to be bribed, would give them to the decision-making process. You want a jury. You want a number of people so that you could maybe influence them, or, you know, maybe you get some of your red hats on there. So I was wondering, why isn't this a jury trial? Why is this a bench trial? Why does the judge get to do this? Well, we find out the lawyer screwed up. And so my mind goes, you know, he's going to upwards of $250 million. He could be fined. He could, you know, never be able to, not be able to do business in New York for, you know, a year, two, five, 10, whatever. Wow. So it could be very interesting to see where this plays out. The other big story of the day, obviously, Matt Gaetz is very unhappy with Kevin McCarthy. And this has kind of turned into a soap opera, to where now Gaetz has filed a motion to vacate the chair, to oust McCarthy. And you knew this was going to come in. In fact, he said he's going to do it a bunch. He's going to do it over and over and over again. He said that he took credit. He said, you know, he made McCarthy go to 15 votes to become speaker. So until I get to 14 or 15, I don't think I'm being any more dilatory. No, I just think you're being a giant. I can't say what I was thinking. Pain in the behind. Let's go with that. But here's the weird thing. This could be a moment where we actually start governing. There are some Republicans, not a lot, but there are some who are going, no, we don't want to crash the economy. No, we don't want, you know, horror and misery. We don't want what would come from a shutdown. Now, I look at where we are as a country. We have a news media culture that focuses on all the wrong stuff. The fact that I saw a story about Donald Trump ordering from McDonald's is shameful. The fact that if it bleeds, it leads, it's shameful. And this is on us as well. You know, they believe this is what we want. We want the negative stuff. We want to be beaten down. We don't want any good news. No, that might make us happy. So when I saw these series of stories that just grabbed my attention, you know, there's little enthusiasm for Biden or Trump. Mammoth has a poll out now. 37% of voters expressed at least some enthusiasm for Donald Trump. 32% for Joe Biden. Not at all enthusiastic. 52% for Trump, 53% for Biden. So we're already, you know, tapping down, you know, nobody really wants these guys. And, you know, NBC poll, 15% want a third party. Would they back a third party candidate? And then I see the mother of it. I see Bloomberg. Bloomberg tells me that the recession's still likely, you know. You know, with all the children in the house, the recession still could come because there are some cheerleaders who still want to push the recession frame. Got to have that, right? Then you see the stories that come down about what people believe. And this comes back down to what our media is shoveling in their face. You know, when asked, would you describe these days are excellent, good, or poor? The number of people who say excellent or good, 25%. Not so good or poor, 74%. When you ask people, you know, incomes of the average American, if you're happy with that, 57% said no, 35% yes. Food prices, 87% say they're horrible, bad, not good. The whole point of the poll that they did was to put people into the two camps. It's either really good or it's really bad. And the really bad always seems to win because we've been trained to believe everything is bad. Every story we hear is bad. The economy is terrible. Unemployment is terrible. Unemployment is at historic lows. Wage growth is happening. Bankruptcies have actually gone down. Personal bankruptcies have actually gone down. I mean, there's a lot of good, but you don't hear any of this stuff. And the reason, there's a good reason. How many liberal business channels have you ever seen? Where you're going, how many workers are sitting on the business roundtable? How many have a seat there? How many times do you hear workers talking about anything positive? We've been thrown into this world where everything has to, if it bleeds, it leads. Everything has to be negative. And they keep us in this so that you go, well, it's all Joe Biden. It's Joe Biden's fault. Now, did I mention the fact that, you know, when things turn around and you get a Republican president, that messaging seems to change a lot? Have you figured this out yet? When the reality is, you know, I go back to Harry Truman who said, you know, if you want to live like a Republican, vote for a Democrat, because it's their policies that allow average everyday working people to do better. It's their policies that shore up a safety net so that people have an opportunity to put out a shingle and try. And yet, you know, every recession that I remember, you know, it's a Republican doing it. It's those austerity, starvation policies that hurt so much. And one of the lines I loved from Hillary Clinton when she was running, you know, it takes a Clinton to clean up after a Bush, which I thought was a fantastic line because Bill Clinton inherited a mess from George H.W. Bush. And when Hillary Clinton was running in 08, well, Obama got the mess, but she wanted the job. We seem to forget that. And right now, things are moving in the right direction. We're doing good things. We're reshoring manufacturing. Wages are going up. We're investing in the future of the country. But we've got a corporate-controlled media. Understand, virtually everything we see, hear, and read, controlled by 6 major corporations. That's it. Do you think they have a vested interest in keeping, you know, regulations down, keeping, you know, you know, higher taxes on rich people down? Do you think they have a vested interest in policies that come out of a government run by, well, working people? Of course they do. Which is why we never hear anything positive about working people. It's always, you know, those lazy union workers. Which that frame is back now. And we've been hearing a ton of it. And as I said to someone the other day, I said, if you see a lazy union worker, it's because you have lazy management. You're using that person's labor wrong. Because look, I know a lot of lazy non-union workers. And they'll tell you because they're not being paid enough to work. But we're in this moment and we have to decide. So I suggest we start turning off some of the horrible corporate stuff. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I got to tell you, it's still quite remarkable that we're still being slammed with this stuff. It's all bad. It's all bad, Rick, don't you know? Let's go to the phones. We got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you?
I'm fine, and I wanted to raise a couple of points. So one, I believe that Donald Trump is just as afraid of the world finding out that he's not as wealthy as he likes to make out himself to be as he is of any sort of civil judgment against him. So, you know, God forbid that the world find out that Donald Trump isn't actually a billionaire, because that would hurt him more so than a lot of other things. You know, he ran on that sort of concept. You know, I'm the successful guy who built this multi-billion-dollar fortune. Turns out that, you know, basically he got the equivalent of about $400 million from his family. And if he had just put that into the market and let people manage it and went out and played golf, he'd have more money than him having managed it himself. So he doesn't want people to find that out. You know, basically he undermined his own wealth through his mismanagement. So that's point number one. And two, I mean, you know, it was like having a crystal ball last week, because we discussed this, you know, that if the McCarthy had these two choices, deal with the crazies in his own party, and we're going to get a government shutdown, which doesn't benefit Republicans, or make a, you know, same deal with adults in the Democratic Party. And again, there are a few adults in the Republican Party recognize that a shutdown, government shutdown, benefits nobody, least of which the people who initiate it. So he cut the deal. Now, he knew full well that what was probably going to happen. But that puts him in a sort of a strange situation, because there is no alternative to McCarthy. It's not as if, you know, Matt Gaetz is going to be Speaker of the House, or somebody in the crazy caucus is going to be Speaker of the House. And the Democrats don't have enough votes. So the question is, do the sane Republicans cut some kind of a deal with Democrats? Democrats say that they're not in the House to help the Republicans retain power or, you know, control the speakership. So what happens now? Could it be the case that enough Republicans, you know, move over so that perhaps we can get a Democratic speaker? I doubt that happens. But what could happen is that we just have a House without a speaker for a very long time, meaning nothing gets done.
Yep.
And to the extent that the wackos are just that, that's exactly what they want. They're fine with the nothing getting done and nothing else getting passed, because, you know, they love government that doesn't work.
No, they actually run on it, and you're those are the alternatives. And I've said that I think Democrats should stay out of it, stay out of the pie fight, and stop trying to save the Republican Party. This is their baby. Let them figure it out. And look, who would want the job? I mean, to be honest, you know, even if you could find a consensus candidate, who would want the kind of headaches that are coming, knowing that at any time someone can, one person can vote, can, you know, petition to vacate the chair? It would be an absolute nightmare, because McCarthy's original sin was allowing that little rule change to happen, which was stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you could eke out a victory, perhaps, but then you're in this position where, you know, you've got very little support to get anything done as a Republican speaker, because Democrats aren't going to support you, and then your party's still divided, and then we're going into an election cycle, which already means that nothing much gets done to begin with. So, you know, you pretty much be a footnote in history at best, and you could be a terrible footnote in many cases, depending upon, you know, what kind of agenda we have. You know, because in the event of any kind of a crisis in this country, you need somebody in that position that actually could get legislation passed. I mean, you know, the reason that things actually worked during COVID and the economic and social and political ramifications that entailed the COVID pandemic was because we had functional government, despite Donald Trump being the president. And we managed to get things done and passed. But, I mean, I don't know how you get through a crisis if you don't have a functional speaker. And so, I mean, that's the only thing that would bother me. But going forward, I'm not too concerned, because the House, again, doesn't get much done in an election cycle.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this goes, because the name, Fitzpatrick's name here from Pennsylvania, was thrown out by a couple of friends going, what about him? I'm going, at this, you know, he may have been willing at the beginning, but he would be an idiot to throw himself in the middle of this now.
Yeah, I mean, what advantage do you have? I mean, is it the case that perhaps you're hoping that down the road you are at the top of the list when you perhaps the Congress regains power again, and that you were Speaker at one point, and hopefully they can move you to the top of the list in terms of contenders? But other than that, yeah, you're right. I mean, who would want the job? You know, I'm not sure. I didn't understand why McCarthy wanted the job. I mean, he was going to be embattled from the very start, and this is exactly where we ended up. We've got a 45-day grace period, but as you pointed out, you know, that leads you almost into Thanksgiving. And the problem with this is a government shutdown just before Thanksgiving. I mean, there's a whole slew of problems there.
Yep.
And
then we kick the can down until Christmas.
Right, exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that government needs to provide for taxpayers in order for the holidays to work right. I know people don't understand that, but that actually does have to work that way. Air traffic controllers need to show up. Technically, they're still supposed to show up in the event of a shutdown, but a lot of them opt not to. And we all know how terrible it is flying already, let alone post-COVID, let alone going into Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, yeah, the American people, if they're not already disgusted, trust me, you are going to be looking at an unhappy public if that's the case.
There you go. Steve, appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the thoughts. Let's go to Alice online, too. Alice, how are you today?
Insane. How's that?
Back to normal, I see. Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to agree with you about the media. And it's not just the news. It's the newspapers also. I have a subscription to the Washington Post. And instead of reading stuff that seems to be, you know, going on, I'm getting things like backroom battles between IRS agents, persecutors in Hunter Biden tax case, and then that Megan McArdle writing articles about society is best served when parents are married and children react better. And I'm thinking, oh my God, why don't you, you know, I want to see what's going on here. I don't want to see this stupid stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, bring me the news. Yeah, I know. I'm with you, Alice. Appreciate it, though. Thanks.
Bye.
No, this is look, we've been talking about our beating up on the media for a very long time. But understand, they're giving us what they think we want. We want the divisive. We want the negative. We want the horrible. We want the juice. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. That's what we want. We want to, you know, I had someone tell me one time that, you know, he takes great joy in hearing other people's miseries, because this is so twisted. He said he likes hearing other people complain, especially about how horrible things are and how bad their life is, because it makes him feel better that sometimes their problems are worse than his. which is really very twisted and bizarre. But I think on a certain level, that's how we as a country view our media, that, you know, it's all horrible out there. And, we need to take on the horrible, even if my life isn't bad. But the problem is, I think we've internalized it. You know, our lives are horrible because we didn't get absolutely everything we wanted. I don't know. It's weird and bizarre, but I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Anything you think, I'd love to hear it. Also, remember, grab the podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast. You'll find ours. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1949. That was the day Americans awoke to fears the nationwide steel strike would spread rapidly to include key fabrication plants. 500,000 steel workers had joined 400,000 coal miners on strike the morning before. The miners resolved to defend their $100 a month pension, instituting what John L. Lewis called the No Day Work Week, emboldened the steel workers to walk out of the mills. Within 24 hours, 96% of all steel production in the country was completely shut down. United Steelworker contracts were due to expire on the 15th, but the writing was on the wall. The mill owners decried anything close to mine pensions as nothing short of socialistic and refused to budge in negotiations. United Steelworkers President Phil Murray thundered that those companies that failed to agree to demands for non-contributory pensions and insurance would be shut down. But militants warned that President Truman's fact-finding board had already watered down strike demands. The president's board had been established to put off two previous strike deadlines. The guidelines it issued only encouraged steel magnates to stand tough against United Steelworker demands. These included a 30-cent raise plus increased company insurance and pension contributions. Now, it had become a defensive struggle over whether steelworkers would have to begin contributing to health and pension plans through wage cuts. By the time steelworkers ended their strike 42 days later, they had won the $100 a month pension minus what they would receive from Social Security, and they had to begin contributing to a health insurance plan with no wage increase at all. Still, workers celebrated that they had successfully defended the United Steelworkers against the all-out union-busting drive.
In the mid-1800s, a new political party flared up in America, posing as an alternative to both the Democratic and Republican parties. Xenophobic and nativist, it was extremely secretive about its specific structure, motive, and agenda. Indeed, members were instructed to say, "I know nothing," when asked about details. Thus, it was quickly dubbed the Know-Nothing Party. In 1856, it nominated Millard Fillmore as its presidential nominee, but he was reticent to talk about the party and even unwilling to proclaim that he was a member. He lost, and the Know-Nothing soon withered. But now, here comes another alternative party with secretive motives and backers. Labeling themselves No Labels, this group ought to be named the Nothing Party, for it offers nothing of substance to voters. Its so-called common-sense agenda is fluffier than cotton candy, yet is trying to run a third-party candidate in next year's presidential race. Why? Follow the money. That's not easy to do, though, for this gaggle of conservative corporatists slyly incorporated as a nonprofit social welfare outfit, a deceit that lets it hide the names of its political funders from the public. The New Republic, however, got records revealing that No Labels is a fat cat front, with Texas billionaire Republican Harlan Crow leading the way. Who? Crow is the political patron who has secretly been lavishing luxury gifts and cash on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who in turn has embraced Crow's plutocratic positions in court cases. This is Jim Hightower saying that same plutocratic agenda appears to be fueling No Labels' third-party presidential push. For these rich politicos know that a milquetoast spoiler candidate would most likely draw independent moderates from Joe Biden, giving Crow and company another GOP corporate presidency. It's a cynical game, but that's how they play it.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I think my favorite screenshot of Fox News happened today, I saw. The thing, Trump gains, others fail post-second debate. They actually go through the different candidates and how much they lost. Like DeSantis, his approval went down 3%. Ramaswamy went down 2%. Nikki Haley went down 2%. Pence went down 1%. Trump didn't even show up, and he, well, crushed the competition. Shows you kind of how bad they are. It is what it is. But today, the big day, no government shutdown. McCarthy's being ousted, and Trump, got the death penalty corporate-wise. So here to share some thoughts with us on, well, if this means anything, I've asked our good friend Chris Hahn to come talk with us. Chris is a syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. You can find all that over at ChristopherHahn.com. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, man. How you doing?
Good. So kind of a big day, you think?
I mean, Matt Gaetz is going to file his motion and they'll see it in 48 hours. I don't think he's going anywhere. Now, I have been saying this on my podcast and on the radio, on TV. Where are these problem solvers we've heard so much about? They seem to get like ink once in a while. They're on Jake Tapper and Smirconish. I would like the problem solvers to identify the key problem in this country, which is that the MAGA Republicans that control the House of Representatives are a chaos caucus. They don't even have a governing philosophy. There's nothing about them that makes any sense at all. I mean, say what you want about, the Freedom Caucus of like 6 years ago, but at least we knew what they wanted. I don't know what these guys want other than to destroy everything and burn everything down and to basically cover for Donald Trump. So these problem solvers need to, there's 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats, I believe, in this caucus.
Yeah.
The 10 Republicans need to join hands, cross the aisle, and support the motion to vacate, and then support Hakeem Jeffries for speaker and end the tyranny of the minority in this country, because the Republicans didn't win a majority of votes for the House. They may have won a majority of seats thanks to gerrymandering, but they're not a majority party, and they've gotten way too much, and they're basically destined to destroy the country. And I get it. A lot of these people will then be primaried and lose their seats. But what's the point of even having a Congress if we're not even going to be a Republic anymore?
No, and it's an excellent point. But, who would want the job? Who would want the job knowing that one vote could do what Gaetz is doing? If you put Hakeem Jeffries in there, don't you think Gaetz would do that every other day?
Oh, no. If you put Hakeem Jeffries in there with 10, 10 Republicans joining to put it, Hakeem, you change the rule. That's the end of it.
Can you change the rule mid-legislative
most
body?
Sir, the House is a majoritarian organization. If you have enough votes, you could do whatever you want in the House of Representatives. You could change that rule. In fact, for Kevin McCarthy to be saved by Democrats, which, everybody thinks that he's going to be saved by Democrats, there's going to have to be some changes to the rules. And some of the changes to the rules are going to have to require some guarantees of the things that Kevin McCarthy has been promising. And particularly, he's going to have to give the Democrats some power. You don't give away votes for free.
True.
Right. So, I mean, there is no path for Kevin McCarthy to remain as speaker without support from Democrats. And there is no support from Democrats without a significant change to the rules and without some significant power coming in their directions. I suspect that by the end of the week, we're going to have a much clearer picture of what happens here. Maybe by the end of Wednesday or Thursday, right? So I fully expect that Kevin McCarthy will have to make a deal, or the problem solvers will have to make a deal and solve the problem. And look, Kevin's a weak speaker. The man is a weak speaker. He is not to be trusted. He's already broken his promise that he made when he negotiated the debt ceiling. He's broken it. So why would anybody believe him? Now, I give him credit for not allowing the government to shut down. I give him credit for passing the debt ceiling. That was very difficult to do in the position he's in. But I don't, give him a pass for breaking his rules. And again, I'm a partisan. I'm not giving you my vote for free. And I think Hakeem Jeffries and the leadership of the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives are very disciplined on this. You watched AOC yesterday. you know, who everybody thinks is this wild card person. She's not. She's actually a very skilled legislator who is kind of figured out this game pretty quickly. And she was very clear. I'm not supporting Kevin McCarthy for speaker. And if he's going to get bailed out by us at all, what's in it for us?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's the game.
No, because everyone's waiting for Democrats to do what Democrats do, and that is save the Republican Party. And I'm like, you know, they should stay out of this pie fight. Let the.
Oh, and by the way, if any of those problem solvers on the Democratic side cross the aisle and save Kevin McCarthy from nothing, yeah,
shame on
you know,
them.
Shame on them. And I could see that happening too. So although it's going to take more than 10, I think, right? So, you know, it looks like there's about 20 or so votes to oust McCarthy. So you need 20 or so Dems to keep to save him. So I think that means you need a leadership deal. And I don't know what he's going to offer them. I debated Mick Mulvaney on this yesterday, you know, and Mick, pretty smart guy, right? He's been around the block a few times. He doesn't think there's any math that makes Hakeem Jeffries speaker. I disagree. I think that there are some moderate Republicans who are annoyed with the way Kevin McCarthy has allowed, you know, 20 or so nitwits to kind of hijack the caucus.
Yeah, I'm chewing on that because, you know, the thought of Hakeem Jeffries getting Republican votes. I don't know. I don't know that I'm with you on that.
Well, you know, he concedes that they could be a Democrat, but it wouldn't be somebody from the leadership, yeah. Right? That they would have to have some sort of compromise person who's kind of like a no kind of like name, kind of just an interim speaker kind of thing. And that was his argument. He did not just, you know, Mick did not dismiss the idea of a potential Democrat. He dismissed the idea of
it's happened before.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see Jeffries though.
I think if Matt Gaetz successfully brings this motion to the floor and the Democrats aren't going to back him and he has the 5 votes he needs to he has enough votes to vacate the chair. You wind up with coalition government no matter what you do.
Right.
So and there's only a 5 vote majority. And, you know, at any given time, one or two of them could be gone. So maybe you got a 3 vote majority and you got one of them's indicted on several charges. I don't know. I mean, I've seen crazier things happen in my life.
Like, you know, someone brought up earlier the fact that we could have no speaker.
No, you can't have no speaker.
Well, if you can't get someone with enough votes, if you can't get someone into that position, what are you going to do?
You can't operate the House without a speaker.
And then that's
so and that would be really bad. And I don't think that would last more than a couple of days. I mean, as we saw that at the beginning of the year, right? People start getting mad. Punches almost get thrown on the floor of the House of Representatives. But the Democrats are not going to resolve the Republicans' leadership fight for them. It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, no, I was happy to see they didn't do it the first time. So they shouldn't get involved in it this time.
They're not going to do it this time either unless they get something sweet in return.
Yeah, like maybe not steal food out of the mouths of children. Maybe not, you know, gut Meals on Wheels funding. You know, maybe not do all of the horrible things that, you know, if you look at that legislation that they wanted to ram through, maybe not do that.
Right, right. Maybe not do that. Maybe end the fraud impeachment hearing that has no basis in fact.
Oh, so you know, I wanted to continue that.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, the problem I see with it is that the media is obsessed with telling both sides of the story. And if we're talking about the criminal that is Trump with his 92 indictments and then his civil cases that are even worse in some respect, you know, we must say something bad about the Democrats, right? We must cover this impeachment hearing, which was a joke, which was a fraud. Even their own witnesses said it was a joke and a fraud.
Yeah.
You know, and then when they introduce evidence, they're introducing, you know, doctored evidence that, you know, again, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez kind of tore apart. You know, it's you know, stranger things have happened. I want rules. I want changes to the rules and I want ending of things and I want chairs. I want chairs. If Kevin's going to stay in power, he's going to give us a chair.
Wow.
Something important.
There you go. We'll see. Well, look, I mean, I think he's the kind of guy who will do whatever he needs to do to keep his seat. Well,
he likes that office. I mean, it's got a very nice view of the mall. It's beautiful. You could see all the way to the Lincoln Memorial. I was there. I was in D.C. for a couple of days last week. It's inspiring.
Yeah.
So.
But if you listen to my conservative friends, it's on fire. Like every major city in the country, it's all bad. It's all bad, Chris.
It's not on fire. I saw a couple of people who might have had some mental illness while I was out there. They were fine. I mean, I tend to look like a cop, so, you know, they kind of stay away from me. But it was fine. I walked at night in D.C. Look, I have a thing when I go to a strange city. I got to find a good ice cream place, like a good local ice cream place. And there was one about a mile from my hotel, staying right by the Capitol. And I walked to this place at night after dinner, like around 7:30. It was dark. Walked up there, got myself a gelato, walked past the World Kitchen, which was, you know, the food bank of D.C. There were people there. It bothered me. You know, I get it. Look, man, people have to understand there, but for the grace of God go I. I grew up pretty poor, very poor, frankly. I went to college on the Educational Opportunity Program here in New York. Food stamps. My mother was 16 when I was born. It, you know, not pretty. You know, we can all be there, right? We're all like one catastrophe away from that. So, you know, my first instinct is, what can we do to help? How can we make these people have a better life? And I think that if we thought more of that in this country and stop looking at people as, oh my God, that'll never happen to me, and start thinking about what can happen to you.
Yeah.
I think we'd be better off.
No, you're spot on. It's the reason that I'm a Democrat. The reason that I support their policies.
Me too.
I believe, much like you, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. My mother was 16 as well. We were on and off food stamps, you know, and it was the most humiliating, embarrassing moments of my life that I still remember and I internalize. And I want no one to have to suffer those indignities just to put food on the table. So, you know, we share that, I think, is
nothing like wearing your cousin's clothes to the first day of school and your cousin was a lot thinner than you. You know, I mean, I'm pretty fit now, but when I was a kid, when I got to high school, I did okay because sports fixed me. But no, when I was an elementary school kid, man, I looked goofy.
Yeah. Where are we going
with this conversation, Rick? What is this here? The Howard Stern show? You're going to bring out my tall tales, my tales of woe?
No, look, I think it's important that people hear these, that these stories get out there. It's one thing to see you, on TV and, you know, doing your thing, but to realize that, you know, you weren't born with a golden spoon. You didn't have all of the advantages opportunity. People gave you a helping hand, like you said, and there was the opportunity scholarship that gave you the ability to go on to school.
I don't
hear you going, hey, you know what, I got it, screw the people behind me, I need a tax shot.
No, you know, and not only that, I'll go one step further. Even though I'm not a religious person right now, I mean, I'm not anything but it. I grew up in the church and I read the teachings of Christ. And, you know, it's funny, all these religious right people who, you know, are laughing at the jokes that Donald Trump's telling over the weekend about Paul Pelosi being beaten in his own home. You know, Matthew 25 is a driving principle in my life. That which you do unto the least of them, you do unto the Christ. Right. I don't understand how this party, this Republican Party, which I used to think had some sort of moral compass, allows that man to go and, you know, throw F-bombs. He's running for president of the United States. What about the children? You remember how we used to always have to worry about the children? Remember how the Republican Party was trying? Look, I'm a Howard Stern fan. You know this. You remember how they were trying to drive him out of radio?
Yeah.
Because what if a kid was in the backseat of the car listening to his parents' radio? What about the kids watching a former president give a speech who's dropping an F-bomb and joking about a man who was almost beaten to death in his own home, who is still recovering? The cruelty of that party is just beyond me. And then for them to say they are Christians, it blows my mind. The hypocrisy of it drives me insane.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. The cruelty is the point.
That is. That's it.
That's the reality of it. These people are cruel.
Yeah.
And that's really the point in all this, to make other people suffering their entertainment. And look, I'm sure you've seen a lot of his speeches where he just rattles on. I mean, I'm I listened to the right beat up on Biden for him not being the greatest orator in the world, but I've been listening to Trump. He sounds like, I don't know what's going on up there. Maybe all of these trials are getting him. I mean, today
maybe he's old too. Maybe he's an old man too. Maybe. I mean, he's 79. I'm sorry. He's not only old, but part of his blood is KFC gravy, right? He's 50% gravy. He's 50% gravy. He's incredibly overweight, although I do think he's on Ozempic right now. He looks like he's thinning out a little bit, but he's overweight. He's got that, you know, I don't know, what is it, cotton candy hair that he does, you know, and you're telling me he's the guy? He says he's running against Obama and that he beat Obama in 2016. I don't know. He doesn't even know where he is half the time. I've seen him walk downstairs. It's not pretty. We all have.
Do they have a short stare? Can you believe that last week the big story was Biden wears tennis shoes and then they're worried about him falling while he's walking the picket line?
He's 80 years old. Okay. Look, Biden is an old man and it is okay if he takes steps to protect himself from falling because he's an old man.
I take steps to protect myself from falling.
Me too. Okay, I absolutely do. But that's just because you're old and you got to protect yourself from falling. Doesn't mean you're incompetent to talk and learn and do things. He's gotten a lot done. The guy knows what's going on in this world because he's been here as long as anybody in this business. I don't know. The guy's pretty freaking accomplished. And just because he's old, I mean, that's the issue. And then you're going to say, oh, no, let's go with this spry 78-year-old. Give me a break. I mean, here's what I think we should do, okay? We should make it safe for them so neither one of them fall. But we should just have them run laps around the track, both of them together, same time, and see who drops first. And whoever keeps going, my money's on Biden.
Yeah, my money's on Biden.
Whoever drops, whoever can last the longest, is president, all right? Forget the election. Forget spending the money. Let's just have them run laps, and we'll see what happens.
I got to get your thoughts on, lastly, before I let you go, I got to get your thoughts on the big trial today. I guess this is the penalty phase, right? I mean, I guess they screwed up, and it was a bench trial where it's been ruled that the corporate death penalty is possible. What's going on here?
I mean, I don't think he's going to get the corporate death penalty, but he's going to lose something, right? Somebody posted on Twitter or one of the other sites today, let's seize Trump Tower and make it a home for migrants, right, who are coming up here. Right, for seeking asylum. I mean, that'd be great, right?
And leave the Trump name on it.
Yeah, I mean, they'd form a condo board and they'd vote it off like every other condo in New York City. But it's look, I think he made a mistake, but it was going to be bad either way. And now he's in the penalty phase of this. It was a summary judgment that he committed fraud, which is just beyond me. He's screwed in a lot of ways, and he's gonna lose a lot. He's gonna lose a lot of his New York properties. He's not gonna be able to do business in New York, I don't think, anymore. Whether that impacts him broadly across the country, I don't know. I don't think he'll lose Mar-a-Lago. I don't think he'll lose Doral, but he's gonna lose a lot of these properties here in New York, which is a big part of his empire, 40% or so, 50% or so of his empire. So great job, Eric and Don Jr. while running the show, and him himself. I mean, you know, he lied about the assets. I mean, how do you take an 11,000 square foot apartment and say it's 30,000 square feet? That's a pretty big lie.
It was a typing error. But here's the thing. The defense I loved, that he can't overinflate the price of anything because, you know, tell me if I'm wrong here, because it seems weird to me, that he can't make the price high enough because he's always be able to find a Saudi to buy it
or a drug lord. There was evidence that looked like a drug lord, like who formed the S Corp called Snowball Corporation. I mean, come on. I mean, the guy was really proud. He was a proud drug lord. I mean, you could always find somebody who's trying to launder money is what he was basically saying. And that's sick. It's real sick.
There you go.
And that's defense. And I hope he loses everything, but you know, again, 40% of Americans do not understand that this man is evil. And then there's another 10% that are at least willing to give him a chance. And that time to campaign. I was happy that Biden went on the offensive last week, called him what he was, a tyrant. I'm glad that General Milley said what he did. I'm glad to see General Kelly today finally break his silence on this and say, yeah, everything that they wrote about what he said was true. I was there. You know, good. You know what? Start campaigning. But what bothers me is it doesn't matter. Guy's been in the military his whole life. We support the military, but that guy's deep state, even though Trump made him his Homeland Security secretary and his chief of staff, we can't trust that guy now because he's deep state. Somebody's gotten to him. He took the shot, and now Bill Gates controls him.
Crazy, crazy times. But Chris, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff, my friend.
Me too.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Our good friend Chris Hahn. Make sure you check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. Also, the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. You get to wherever you get your favorite podcast. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1935. That was the year that San Diego hosted the California Pacific International Exposition, where President Franklin Delano Roosevelt spoke the most memorable words about the rights of workers to organize. The goal of the exposition was to showcase San Diego and to boost the local economy, which had fallen on hard times during the Great Depression. The exposition was held in Balboa Park. Exhibits included history, science, industry, and culture. To prepare for the expo, improvements were made to the park paid for by the Works Progress Administration. The WPA was a New Deal-era program designed to put people back to work on public infrastructure projects. The expo kicked off in May and ran for 377 days with a break during the winter months. More than 7 million people visited the park for the expo. Two of those visitors was President Roosevelt and his wife Eleanor. As part of his trip, the president gave a speech to 60,000 people at Balboa Stadium. Earlier that year, the president had signed the Wagner Act, otherwise known as the National Labor Relations Act, which guaranteed private sector workers the right to join and form a union. The president spent part of his expo speech celebrating that achievement. He declared, quote, "A changing civilization has raised new problems with respect to the relationship between the employer and the employed. It is now beyond partisan controversy that it is a fundamental individual right of a worker to associate himself with other workers and to bargain collectively with his employer." President Roosevelt went on to acknowledge, quote, "New laws in themselves do not bring a millennium. The passage of the law helped to launch a new wave of union organizing across U.S. industry."
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, as Chris pointed out, General Kelly came out. Now, understand, General Kelly's not just anyone. He was Trump's longest-serving chief of staff. So he was in on all of this. He was there for everything. He was basically Trump's right hand during his time there. And, you know, for him to come out and say, look, you know, what can I say? What can I add that has not already been said? Trump, a person that thinks those who defend their country in uniform or are shot down or seriously wounded in combat or spent years being tortured as POWs are all suckers because there's nothing in it for them. A person that did not want to be seen in the presence of military amputees because it doesn't look good for me. A person who demonstrates open contempt for a Gold Star family, for all Gold Star families on TV during the 2016 campaign, and rants that our most precious heroes who gave their lives in America, America's defense, are losers, and he wouldn't visit their graves in France. He went on to say a person who is not truthful regarding his position on protection of unborn life, on women, on minorities, on evangelical Christians, on Jews, on working men and women, a person who has no idea what America stands for and has no idea what America is about, a person who cavalierly suggests that a selfless warrior who has served his country for 40 years in peacetime and war should lose his life for treason in expectation that someone will take action, a person who admires autocrats and murderous dictators, a person that has nothing but contempt for our democratic institutions, our Constitution, the rule of law. There is nothing more that can be said. God help us. That is the statement of John Kelly, who was his longest serving chief of staff. And remember, Trump only hired the very best people. So in this, when this guy comes forth and says,
you're listening to The Shaw,
WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.